Thomas Finger. Welcome to Worldviews.
Delighted to be here.
So, Thomas, you've had a long career in the field of foreign affairs, foreign service officer, a lot of background and experience in the intelligence world. And, of course, many of us are always curious about the intelligence world. Much of what we know about the intelligence community comes from watching television or film, 007 or whatever. So inherently, that is an area of work that is very secretive, clearly. There's not much maybe we can know about it. There are a lot of things that go on that we don't know and understand. So tell us, first of all, like, how can we know? What do we know? And how can we know much about the intelligence community? How can we study it? You've written a book about it. Tell us a little bit about what we can know.
Well, actually, there's a great deal that one can know. That some of the collection methods, the very, very small percentage of activity classified as covert action, is secret and properly stays secret for a very long time. The analytic products that are done are born classified, no matter what the sources of information, because otherwise they would be the official views of the United States government. And the whole purpose of intelligence is to provide information and insights that will inform the decision-making process. And if those views, those judgments about the intentions and the actions of other countries or particular leaders were to be made public, you're not going to get a frank assessment.
So tell us a little bit more about collection methods. I'm particularly interested in something you said in your book, in particular, Reducing Uncertainty, about intelligence analysis and national security, that the intelligence community can be affected by the political context and that that then shapes, you know, what they do. So how is it that, I mean, because to me it seems like intelligence should be kind of the gathering of the situation, you know, describing a situation, gathering of the facts, if you will. But how is it that politics comes into play and influences how intelligence analysts go about collecting information and then using it after they've analyzed it?
The starting point for me is that intelligence is a support function in the United States government. It's not a policymaking function. It supports those who make policy decisions. That it – collection-wise, it vacuums up a lot of information. In theory, it has access to and collects all of the information that are collected by academics, journalists working on a subject. Most of what is collected is open and available. It also has access to diplomatic reporting, attaché reporting, and it has the ability to go in search of information, either through open polling data, diplomatic questions of foreign counterparts where they know they are speaking to the United States government, or clandestine collection. Where you have a source or you're intercepting a relatively small percentage of the total. But the idea is to gather as much information as one can on the subject. But it isn't simply a matter of collect all the information in the world and sort through it and see what it has to say. That it's support for American policy and the problems that are vexing, troubling U.S. decision makers, executive or occasionally legislative branch. So what the intelligence community goes after is driven in a substantial extent by what the policy issues are. It's not academic research where you explore the questions where you know you have enough information or it's just intriguing to one and there are no time limits on it. This is information and analysis with a goal, and the goal is to provide informed, insightful, timely, and targeted input that gets at the needs, the concerns of policymakers. It's not giving them what they want. It's giving them what the analyst that they are working with feels they need. If they think that their understanding is incomplete or inaccurate, to help them to understand how to put it in perspective and the like. So it's influenced by the policy agenda The policy agenda is influenced by where an administration is in its term, what the legislative calendar is, what the objectives are being pursued. It's not pandering to give them the answers they want. It's to work on the issues that they think they need to address.
I like how you put that. It's a process of vacuuming up a lot of information and that it's influenced clearly by a policy agenda and has certain goals. But might this influence then – I mean, because I think about gathering information and then sometimes, you know, you have to interpret what that information means and what's important and what isn't. And the outcome is I might focus on some things and not on others. And so I assume that this is – true for intelligence analysts as well, and that as you go through the process of gathering this information, analyzing it, that what comes out on the other side is perhaps that you've emphasized certain things like threats, for example, as opposed to emphasizing areas where we can overcome problems or opportunities to address threats. Is that an accurate portrayal of that?
Mostly, but not entirely. That tasks of intelligence, as I and many others interpret them, are three. One is to anticipate threats, provide warning, ideally provide strategic warning, by which I mean alert policymakers while they have time to do something about the problem. That it does very little good to tell people in 20 seconds there's going to be a problem. So looking out to anticipate where events are headed, what is driving them and where intervention might be helpful. A second is to reduce uncertainty, that the issues that policymakers grapple with most of the time are very complex and the short timeframes that are involved, that if it's a problem and they wish they knew 20 things about it and think they know three, if you can provide input on any of those 17 others, you've helped. You've reduced the possibility space. You could say this is – yeah, it's still possible but very unlikely because, or these are more likely because. So you help increase the comfortable – their understanding of the issue, how comfortable they are as they make a decision. The more neglected responsibility is to identify opportunities for policy intervention to achieve a particular goal. This is tricky because the policy – the intelligence community is enjoined, prohibited by law from making policy recommendations and from directly commenting on U.S. policy. If you identify an opportunity, that comes pretty close to saying the current policy of the United States might be changed. So there is a reticence from the intelligence side to do that. There is great receptivity from the policy side. I would love to have a dollar for every time a policymaker said to me one way or the other, all you guys ever bring me are problems. Why can't you ever bring me an opportunity?
But yet it's difficult to do that because of the change that's involved perhaps.
It is difficult to do it because an opportunity to do what? And as soon as you get into the do what, if it is a part of the policy agenda of the official, the administration, then you are supporting, promoting policy in a way that is outside the bounds that have been set.
Rather than analysis, providing just the analysis.
Correct. It makes the analyst appear to perhaps be not objective, to have a special agenda.
Well, I want to ask a question about the national intelligence estimates. You've written about this in your book. And if I recall correctly, these intelligence estimates became quite famous or infamous, shall we say, during the days of providing information leading up to the war in Iraq or prior to 9/11, really. I mean, there were some national intelligence estimates that were reportedly been ignored or overlooked or hadn't really perhaps made the case strongly enough about the threat that we were facing prior to 9/11, and then the way in which they were used in the coming months and years, if I remember correctly. Tell us a little bit about these estimates and how useful they are in providing the kind of information that our leaders need to make decisions on day-to-day issues, but also to prevent, hopefully, really important things from happening like 9/11, 2001.
National intelligence estimates represent one kind and a very small minority of the analytic products of the intelligence community, even the analytic products of the National Intelligence Council. The genesis of estimates and of the National Intelligence Council dates from an era when the constituent agencies were more isolated, separate, independent than they are today. So the National Intelligence Estimate was an organized effort to draw upon the expertise and the insights of all of the relevant components of the intelligence community. It was one of the few ways that you would assemble all of the normal suspects on an issue and have them work on that collaboratively. In the years since intelligence reform, which is to say of the last decade, interaction among analysts from all of the agents is the norm. So intelligence estimates are just one form. They often are requested by officials who want to have the best judgment, the consensus judgment, or to know what the alternate judgments are of analysts working an issue or on an issue that is coming up for decision. Sometimes they are, we haven't looked at that in a systematic way. We ought to do so because either analysts or policymakers are uncomfortable making statements that are based on now dated information or analytic judgments. After the Iraq WMD estimate, the infamous flawed document which I am in part responsible. I represented the Bureau of Intelligence and Research, even though we were the dissenting agency on that part of this process. Estimates became a political stick in sort of partisan politics in Congress versus the executive branch. You didn't ask for a national intelligence estimate. Well, didn't think one was necessary, or the White House didn't think one was necessary, or we want to have the judgments address our question. And what question is asked, as the same in the academic realm, determines the focus of what the answer is. And on the Iraq estimate, for example, the question that was, give us a bill of particulars of all that is known or all that has been reported about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. That's very different than a question that is, do you think he has reconstituted? What do you think he has? And so the question shapes the answer to this. The process by which estimates are produced, get the question right. What's the question that if you can answer it gives you the most insight into a particular problem? Do you have the answers to the prior questions that you would need? Do you have the information that you would need to answer that question in the time available? If not, can you get the information in order to meet the deadline? So it's not an open-ended, I'll write a dissertation on this however long it takes. It's that you've got 2 weeks, you've got 2 months. So you try to reduce uncertainty, add to clarity about the by asking the right questions and bringing to bear the right information and acknowledging analytic differences.
Well, I think you've painted a very interesting picture for us where we've gone from perhaps thinking about the intelligence world being so secretive we can't know much about it to what we do know is that it's very complicated and that it isn't always right. Sometimes it's flawed and sometimes it's pointed and directed in certain ways. But nonetheless, Thomas Fingar, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.